Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have a little roundtable discussion with three of my favorite guests. We've got Jerry Branum, who used to be a writer for Muscle and Fitness magazine. And Jerry has been around the bodybuilding scene since the 1960s. We've had him on the show several times. He's one of my favorite guests. And joining Jerry, we've got Tom Terwilliger, who was the 1986 NPC Nationals light heavyweight winner. And then Tom went on to become a professional bodybuilder in the IFBB, eventually winning the Niagara Falls Pro Show one year. And we've also got Phil Williams, another one of my favorite guests. Phil was the 1985 NPC Nationals winner. And he went on to win the 1988 Chicago Pro Show. So we've got all these guys together, and what we're going to do, and this was suggested by one of our listeners, and I appreciate the suggestion because I thought it was a great idea. We are going to talk about the 8 mandatory poses, which is the front double bicep, the front lat spread, the side chest, the side tricep, the rear double bicep, rear lat spread, the abdominal pose, and the most muscular. And this will be a two-part interview, so we're going to do 4 of the poses today in part one, and then we'll do the other 4 poses next week. And we're sticking with the 1960s, 70s, and 80s guys, which is the scope of our Bodybuilding Legends show. We only talk about those golden age bodybuilders. And we're going to try to pick out who we think looks the best in each one of those poses. So, of course, Arnold was a big candidate for the side chest pose, but we're going to talk about all those poses. And we're going to have a very lively discussion with Jerry and Phil and Tom. So that'll be coming up in a minute. I'm sure you guys will really enjoy this. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation, plus they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Danny Padilla over the last 2 weeks. That was a great interview, and I was really looking forward to that because I've been trying to get Danny on the show for a long time, and he didn't disappoint. He was a great personality, as I knew he would have, and a great sense of humor, and had a lot of great stories. So I hope you guys really enjoyed that. I put part one of the video on my YouTube channel, and it's getting a lot of hits, a lot more than normal. I think it's almost up to 4,000 hits. So that's much better than usual. So Danny is still very popular, and I should have part two of that interview up on my YouTube channel probably by tomorrow. So I want to wish all the mothers out there happy Mother's Day today. I just talked to my mom earlier in the day. And so if you have any mothers out there, whether it's your wife, your sweetheart, your actual mother, whoever it is, all the best to them. Happy Mother's Day. And I did get some emails. I mentioned last week on the show that nobody emails me. And you guys responded and you emailed me, so I appreciate it. I didn't get anything on my Facebook page, but I did get some emails, so I'm going to read those first. All right, Brad Allen says, John, you continue to be the best real-time historian of the sport, and the recent two-parter with Danny Padilla is another great example of that. Danny is a blast to listen to, and I loved hearing him say that Roger Walker might have been the best at the 80 Olympia, because I have said this many times and nobody ever agrees with me. Well, now it's me and Danny saying it. I thought I'd throw something at you that I thought of while listening on my drive home today. As you've done with Tom Terwilliger and John Defendis, or recently with Glenn Kinnear and Larry Bernstein, maybe pair up a couple of the really old school guys and just let them go. An example might be Bill Grant and Danny. Maybe build it around a show like the 1980 Olympia or a place like Gold's on 2nd Avenue. Just some thoughts. Keep it up. I've been a fan from the very first podcast, and I always try to throw a like on the YouTube videos as well. Thanks for all the work, Brad Allen. Yeah, Brad has been consistently emailing me, and I know he's been a fan of the show for a long time. And that's a great idea, Brad. I have been thinking about that, too. I thought Boyer Cole might be good for that. We just had Boyer and Roy Callender about a year ago. But, I definitely will work on that. One of the good things about that pandemic last year was I started using Zoom instead of Skype. I do use Skype occasionally, but Zoom is very much easier for bringing in other people. So I've been putting all my podcasts up on YouTube since I started doing that last year. I think the first one we did, or one of the first ones we did, was when we did Lee Haney and Rich Gaspari. Yeah, it makes it much easier. And I also had it this time with Phil Williams and Jerry Branum and Tom Terwilliger. It was really easy to get all three guys on. So yeah, that's a great idea. And I think that would be a lot of fun. And it's great reconnecting these guys, like the interview we got coming up today with Tom Terwilliger and Phil Williams. Those guys hadn't talked, I don't think, since the 1985 NPC Nationals. And they had a lot of respect for one another. Phil was in first place. Tom was in second. They said they were both thinking about each other a lot as they were getting ready for the show. So it was great. It was great to reconnect those guys. All right, I got another email here from Andrew Heffernan. Andrew says, terrific, John. Thanks to you, younger fans are rediscovering some of the great athletes of the golden era. It's almost like discovering old musicians or movies. Padilla was one of the greats. Nice to see him getting his due. Astonishing how great he looked on so little training. It's interesting that both he and Arnold gained muscle as the show approached, while their competition, after bulking in the offseason, were cutting back down. I'm looking forward to the Ron Love interview and to the Who Looked Best show. Great topic. Keep up the great work. Andrew Heffernan. Thank you, Andrew. And Andrew is one of our generous Patreon donors. So thank you, Andrew, every month for contributing. I appreciate it. I got another email here from Nick Rizzitello. Nick was our fall challenge winner, the John Hansen Fall Fitness Challenge winner. And Nick lost a great amount of weight, and he's really transformed his body to where he had really ripped abs. And I just heard from him recently. He said he's thinking about doing a competition. So I'm glad he's still going strong with the diet and the training. Nick said, thanks so much, John. I absolutely love the podcast. It's the best one out there. All right. This was a really great email. I'll read it for you. When you see who wrote it, I think it's really, really cool. It says, hey, John, once I heard you say, I don't know why you guys don't email me in your last Danny Padilla episode, I was like, no. So here I am. I think many of us mean to email you, but simply forget after hearing each amazing episode. Must I say you have the best podcast in history? Yes, I just said that. In my opinion, you do. I am a 19-year-old girl. I'll be 20 in 2 weeks. I'm obsessed with the golden era. I've only been training a little over a year, so I'm still super tiny. But your podcast has taught me everything I need to know. I have such strong opinions about the sport nowadays, and I'd rather not share my negative thoughts here. But the golden era is my everything. My wall is plastered in pictures of everyone on this podcast, the women too. I have my steel 110-pound barbell set and 6 pairs of dumbbells in the corner of my room. You know, the usual, the basics. I have heard every single episode on your podcast multiple times, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that. I wish more of these bullshit YouTube and social media punks would listen to your show and watch Rick Drayson's channel, rest in peace, so that they can learn a thing or two. I'm the one that runs both Iron History Bodybuilding accounts on Instagram, as well as my page for Franco Colombo, at Franco Colombo. With that being said, I talk to many old school women on the regular, including Shelley Gruel, Mia Finnegan, Tanya Knight, Kim Chavesky, Lori Bowen, Deborah Diana, Monica Brandt, Lena Johansson, and Sandra Blackie. I will let them know about your show. I would love to hear interviews from them. Corey Everson and Ruth Silverman were great, but we need more old school women. Many people in my generation want the classic physique look, girls included, but they fail to realize that basic lifting, squats, curls, bench, rows, laterals, calf raises, etc., are going to get you there and a very clean diet. And instead, they grab weights they can't handle, they don't isolate the muscle at all, and they do too much cardio and eat at In-N-Out after training. Oh, well, their loss. Learn or you won't. When you are meant for this lifestyle, you'll be led to it regardless. Some people are not made for this, and they don't realize the work it really takes. Years and then decades. I'm going to Gold's in Venice for my first time in 2 weeks, and I couldn't be any more nervous. I'm still carrying body fat right now, and I'll be training with one of my jack friends who trains with a bunch of old schoolers. I'm so tiny, I feel I'll get laughed at posing in the mirror. Oh, well, we all start somewhere. Although I am a good poser, and I mean that I practice for at least 75 minutes a day. It's a must, and I'm talking all old school poses, none of this new era nonsense. My body just doesn't speak for itself yet. Thanks, John, for an awesome show with legends who are all my inspirations, including yourself, from Janae Mister, and it's pronounced Renee with a J. So Janae, and Mister as in Mr. Hansen, like the title. LOL. Wow, is that a great email or what? Janae has an Instagram account, and wow, she is a great old school bodybuilder. So I love it. What a great email that was. And man, she's really got the passion for it and the heart for it. So that is really, really awesome. Janae's Instagram page, if you guys want to follow it, is Iron History, and that's with two Y's, H-I-S-T-O-R-Y-Y dot bodybuilding, and that's with two G's, dot two. So ironhistory.bodybuilding.2, and it's with two Y's and two G's on Iron History and bodybuilding. But yeah, she's got a lot of great pictures on there. She put a lot of pictures of me on there, so thank you, Janae, for that. And she sent me an email with some pictures of herself, and she looks fantastic. She made so much progress. She said she's only been training for a year. She made so much progress in a year. She really looks great. And wow, what a great email to hear from a 19-year-old girl who is so into the old golden age like we are. So that was really, really awesome. That email made my week. So keep going strong, Janae, and be sure to share your pictures of when you go to Gold's. Send them to me, and I'll talk about it on the air. All right, I got another email here. It says, good evening, John. Just a quick note. I enjoyed your podcast for a while now. I listened to the Peter McGough episode most recently. It was wonderful hearing Peter and Wayne Galash reminiscing. Goodness, that was priceless. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Also, listening to it reminds me how far we are from the 1980s on the time spectrum. I can remember as a 10-year-old eagerly waiting for the New York City ball to drop on 1979, December 31st. It seems like yesterday when I recall, yet in the same breath, it seems like a lifetime ago. Hope you are well, sir. I don't know who wrote that. I didn't get a name. Sorry about that. But yeah, I love that interview with Peter and Wayne. That was a really special day. We went over to Peter's house, and when I was listening to those guys talk about the 1970 NABBA Universe, which they were both at, I knew that was pretty priceless as I sat there listening to it. So I'm really glad I got to do that, especially since Peter passed away, and Wayne, of course, hardly makes it out here to America. I just talked to him recently, and he hasn't been able to travel to America for a couple of years now because of this coronavirus, and I don't think he'll be able to come this year either because Australia is really strict with their guidelines on who can leave the country and et cetera, and who could travel. So I think he's going to miss the Olympia for the second year in a row, and he never misses the Olympia. He goes out every year, so that's really a shame. So hopefully we'll see Wayne next year in 2022. And this one I just got today. It says, hey, John, I'm out in the garage cleaning my car, listening to the intro of part two of your interview with the Giant Killer. And I just heard you say you don't know why we don't email you. So here you go. Danny is a fantastic interview and very entertaining. Thanks for the effort to get him on the show. Do you have any timeline on when you'll be discussing the mandatory poses with your guest panel? That will be today and next week. If you ever get a chance to interview Arnold, I bet your listeners, myself included, would be glad to chip in. To help cover your travel expenses. Just a thought. How's your training and diet going? What made you make the decision to stop competing? How did your physique change as you entered your late 30s, 40s, and 50s? Several of us are behind you in age, and I bet a lot of us would like to hear your insight. One more thing, I feel like you could do a similar thing to John Meadows on YouTube. Given your experience and knowledge level, I'm sure you have a mountain of knowledge that we could all benefit from. Just a thought. Later, John D. Hartman. All right. Thank you, John. For your questions, how's my training and diet going? It's going very well. I had my hernia surgery last November, and I started training very slow, and I slowly built up my strength as you guys know, I've talked about this on the show many times. I do the MP6 workout where I do 6 week cycles each of power, and then I switch to a cycle for mass. And if you guys are interested in learning about that, I have my book available on Amazon, and you can also order it from the Bodybuilding Legends Show website, or you can also order from John Hansen Fitness website. But things are going good. I've been dieting for the last couple of months, and I'm starting to get a little bit more serious about it. My waist was, I think, about 36 and a half at the beginning of the year, which is pretty fat for me, and now I'm down to 35. My goal is to be 34 by around June 1st or the beginning of June, and then I'll be pretty lean for the summer, and then I want to get even leaner as we get to the end of the summer, early fall, in time for the Mr. Olympia, which is October. I'd like to get down to like a 33 and then get some photos taken, maybe some videos. I definitely want to start doing more videos on YouTube because I think that's the best way to promote yourself and to promote your business in today's world in 2021. So I definitely want to do that. And I think overall I would look better if I'm leaner. And I'm 58 now. And the last time I got in really good shape was when I was 55. So I do this, of course, every couple of years. I get in shape just to see how I stack up, how I look as I get older. And I'm looking pretty good. So I will keep you guys informed as we go along with that. It says, what made you make the decision to stop competing? Well, the last time I competed, and it was just kind of a challenge to myself, I was 53 years old. That was in 2016, so that was 5 years ago. And it was a lot of work. As you get older, of course, I've said this before, it seems like it takes twice as much work to look half as good. I really wasn't happy with the way my body looked. Although I got in great shape, I think I was like close to 200 pounds in the low 190s. So I looked really good for my age, especially. But your body does change. And in my opinion, it just was not as good as it used to look, obviously. And I was also kind of disappointed with the way they do competitions now, because it's not just bodybuilding anymore. Now they have all these different divisions. They have figure, they have bikini, they have men's physique. They now have classic physique. They just added another division called wellness. So as a result of this, they have a ton of divisions, and they have to move you very, very quickly on and off the stage. And I just felt like the whole thing took about 5 minutes, and it was really anticlimactic, and I just didn't get a lot out of it. So I love bodybuilding, of course, and I'm going to continue training all the time as long as I can. And every once in a while, I'll get in shape just to see what I look like. And I love the challenge of that, but I don't feel it's necessary to compete anymore. And they have so many shows, they're just gone and forgotten, like, immediately. It's like it happens and then it's gone. It happens and it's gone. And I won my titles already. I won the Mr. Universe. I won the Natural Olympia. So those are the things that are most important to me. I don't need to compete anymore. I can just do it for myself, take videos, take pictures, and I think a lot more people would see it that way than if I compete in a contest out here in Florida where there's maybe 50 people that would see it. So that's why I'm not going to compete anymore. How did your physique change as you entered your late 30s, 40s, and 50s? That's a great question, because your body changes, especially if you're natural. I first noticed my body changing when I was about 38. I won the Natural Olympia when I was 35. The next year, in 1999, I did not compete. I was going to come back the next year, which was the year 2000. I trained really hard all year. The Natural Olympia was going to be held in Australia, and I had never been to Australia before, so I was really excited about that. I felt like I had a really good chance of going back and winning it again. I was a little bit bigger. I was training really, really hard. Maybe I was putting a little bit too much pressure on myself. And then I ended up tearing my bicep in an accident I had at work. And it was the week before the contest. So I trained all year for this contest, and I tore my bicep tendon the week before. Had to get that repaired the next week. Obviously, the show was done. Then I came back the next year. And when I came back, I noticed that my metabolism was different. It took longer to get leaner. It still was pretty fast, but it wasn't as fast as it was like in my 30s, earlier 30s. So that's when I really noticed my body had changed. So that injury really came at a bad time, because I was trying to recover from the injury, and that was exactly when my body was changing. So I had two really bad years competitive-wise, and that was 2001 and 2002. Looking back now, I don't even think I should have competed in 2001. I tried to rush it just to make a comeback, but I really needed more time to get over that injury with the bicep. When I tore my bicep, they put my arm in a cast for 8 weeks. I think it was 8 weeks at least, maybe longer than that. And my arm atrophied so much, and I got scar tissue or calcium deposits in my arm, and I didn't have the full range of motion in my arm, and it took a long time to get that back. I ended up being off of training for like 3 or 4 months, which is the longest I've ever taken in my entire life. So I tried to rush it. I tried to get in shape, and I just wasn't in good shape. And then the next year, I was so mad that I did bad the year after I tore my bicep that I pushed myself even harder, which was a mistake. And I went really, really heavy. And I think I was around 39 at this time. And I ended up straining a ligament in my lower back, deadlifting like 455 pounds. So then my lower back was messed up, which really screwed up my leg and back workouts. And then I was doing heavy presses behind the neck with, I think, close to 225 pounds, and I strained the rotator cuff muscle. So now I had an upper body injury and a lower body injury. So it really messed up my training, but I was stubborn, and I continued to train, and I competed, and I did even worse. I looked even worse than the year before. So I had two really, really bad years. The year I turned 40, I didn't compete, and then I came back at 41, and I looked much better, but I could just see I didn't look as good as I did in my 30s. So that's when I decided to stop competing. And I competed for a long time. I finally went back into competition at 48. And that was the year, so I had a 7-year layoff. That was the year I made the cover of Iron Man. Now, what's interesting then is I decided not to worry about my weight and not to worry about size. And I just wanted to get as conditioned as possible for that cover of Iron Man. And my weight went all the way down to under 190. I was like 188. But I looked really good. I was really ripped. And then I started competing again, and I competed for a couple more years. And that was when I won the Natural Mr. Universe at 49 years old the next year. That was my third Natural Mr. Universe win, and I won the Masters Pro Division in the Natural Mr. Universe. And I believe that was in 2012. So what happens as you get older, if you're natural, is your testosterone level goes down. And if you look at natural bodybuilders, they either look big and bulky, they want to retain their size, so they're eating more, but they're kind of adding more fat. Or if they want to stay really lean, like my friend Merle Hall from Chicago, who I've talked about a lot on the show, he just celebrated his 80th birthday, but Merle was still competing in the open division against young guys when he was 70. And he got his pro card at the NPC Nationals when he was 70 years old. Merle was amazing. But I remember an interview I did with Merle for Iron Man magazine. Merle told me that he lost about 20 to 25 pounds of lean muscle tissue as he got older. And that's what happens as you get older. Your body just loses muscle because your hormone levels change. So if you want to be ripped and be competitive as an older bodybuilder, you have to accept the fact that you're going to be a little bit smaller and you're going to be lighter. If you want to stay big, like I remember I gave Bob Bellucci a Lifetime Achievement Award at the first show I did out here in Tampa, which was in 2014. And Bob was very big and bulky. And remember, when he competed, he was a big guy, but he was not lean. And honestly, looking at him, you probably wouldn't be able to tell he was a bodybuilder. But Bob is older now, probably close to 70. And he just still trains, and he still trains heavy, but he's just a big guy. He's bulky. So if you want to keep your size, you kind of got to eat more and just be big and bulky. So that's how your body changes. And of course, you have to be very careful with injuries. I'm now 58. I still train heavy. I still do as many basic movements as I can. The only thing I stay away from is deadlifts, but I still squat. I still do bent over rows. I just have to take more precautions. I have an inversion table at my home that I use, and that seems to help with the compressed disc I have in my lower back. I also try to do yoga like 3 or 4 days a week, and that really helps with keeping my body flexible. And I warm up a lot, and I just train within my limits. I don't push myself to total failure. I do that MP6 program, and I just gradually use progressive resistance over each cycle, but I'm not training to failure. And that way I think I can avoid injuries and pulling things and things like that. But I really enjoy my training. I love using this MP6 cycle because I know exactly what weights I have to push for every week. It's challenging. It's progressive resistance. And I really love it. So I look forward to every workout I do. I never get bored. And I know it's a cycle, so it builds up for a certain amount of time. And then you take some time off and you build up again. So you're not like having to push yourself to the limit all the time, every week, week after week, month after month. And I did that when I was younger and I was able to do that. But as you get older, your body changes and you have to kind of work with it a little bit. But that was an excellent question. I'm glad you asked that because I have the experience of going through that because I've been training since I was 14 and training hard and training serious every year. So I can tell you for sure how your body changes. All right. So thank you guys for those emails. Keep them coming. I love hearing from you guys. NaturalOlympia@gmail.com. And let me know what you think about the show this week with Tom Terwilliger and Phil Williams and Jerry Branum. Let's see. What else we got going on? Oh, I got a call this week from Ed Pariso, who runs the MPC Europa Games. He does one show in Orlando and then also Dallas and also Phoenix. He's been doing it for many, many years. And he just reached out to me and he said he wants me to help him with the games by doing some interviews on their stage with some pros. So I'm going to try and get some old pros. I'm going to looking at maybe Vince Taylor and maybe some other ones out here in the Florida area. And we'll do like a little roundtable discussion, maybe a pro interview, some interviews with some of the pros. So I was glad he reached out to me. So that'll be July 1st and 2nd out in Orlando. I'm really looking forward to that. And out here in Tampa, we've got the New York Pro coming next weekend on May 15th, which will be next Saturday. So Sean Ray will be in town, and I think I'm going to help Sean do some interviews for digitalmuscle.com. So that'll be exciting. So I'm looking forward to that. So I'll let you guys know what happens with that. And that is all I got for my opening. I don't want to keep you guys too long. Here is our interview with Phil Williams and Tom Terwilliger and Jerry Branum, where we talk about who looked the best in the mandatory poses from the golden era of bodybuilding. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have three of my special guests here with me today. We are going to talk about who looks the best from the 70s and 80s of all the mandatory poses. So we've got my friend Jerry Branum, who used to be a writer for Muscle and Fitness magazine, and he is here to give us his opinion. How you doing, Jerry?
How you doing, John?
Good to have you with us again. I got Tom Terwilliger, 1986 NPC Nationals champion and IFBB pro. Tom, what was the pro show you won?
It was the Niagara. But I want to add this, though, because one of your other guests is that if it wasn't for your other guest, I would have won the 85. The guy, it's just like, he showed up out of nowhere. And I was like, what?
Get me awake. I had to wait a year. Going into that show. You kept me awake. I used to think about you all the time. I couldn't even sleep at night.
You too. I actually had a sweatshirt made up that says, "I will destroy Phil Williams." So I wore it on the back of my it was on my sweatshirt as I trained every day, man. It didn't happen. You deserve it. You look great. You look great. But thanks, Tom, for having me on again. I appreciate it.
But like I said, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have been in that condition because you kept me awake at night.
I truly appreciate
I pushed that much harder. I promise you that, buddy.
Thank you, man. Right.
And my other guest, Phil Williams, 1985 MPC Nationals champion and 1988 Chicago Pro winner. So thanks to all you guys for joining me. All right. Well, let's get started. We are going to limit our discussion as what our show is all about. We're going to limit our discussion to the 70s and 80s. We're not going to talk about the 90s bodybuilders or beyond. We're just going to stick with the golden age, the 70s and 80s. So let's take the front double bicep pose first. I was thinking along the lines of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger looks fantastic in this pose, Robbie Robinson and Sergio Oliva, and maybe even Boyer Coe. What do you guys think? Who would be your choice for the best front double bicep of the golden era?
Well, I think if we had to go from that particular group, I would have to go. I think I would have to. I know it's going to sound cliche and like kowtowing, but I'd have to go with Schwarzenegger. However, I think I would probably have to throw someone else in there who also competed in the later 70s with those same competitors well into the 80s. I competed with him in a Mr. Olympia competition, which was Samir Banout, who had a fantastic front double bicep and very complete. Even as I look at Arnold in that front double bicep, there are areas, you know, going by a slightly different standard that just there's some weaknesses in there a little bit. His lats might have been a little high. Samir had a great balance. I don't know if he'd win that pose down or not. But I have to throw them in the mix for just a little interest.
Okay.
Also, let me jump in by, you know, just to underscore what Tom just said. If you really look closely at Arnold, let's say Arnold compared to Samir, right? Arnold had this tremendous bicep development. I mean, it was overwhelming. There's no question about it. In fact, when I worked out with Arnold a couple of times, he used to finish his arm workout. He'd go like this, like he just put his arms out like that. I'd never seen arms that big in that pose. I mean, they were immense. But the thing I remember about Arnold is that if you really look at him carefully, he was bicep dominant. His tricep was good, but not that great. Now, Samir, he had better balance. He had the bicep and the – Samir had tremendous – am I right, Tom? He
great balance.
Tremendous tricep development.
Yeah, great triceps.
So if you went strictly by the balance, you know, of everything, Samir would actually have better arms than Arnold. But, of course, Arnold was bigger, so people would right off the bat say, well, Arnold's got bigger arms. We're getting Arnold's better. But not if you really look at it, if you analyze it carefully. What do you think about that, Phil? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I very rarely saw good tricep poses or pictures of Arnold.
Right.
Now, Samir had beautiful triceps and a full, complete biceps. Like you said, they weren't outstanding or overly large. But, yeah, overall, I think he may have had a better arm.
That's a good point. Now, think about it. How many pictures have you seen of Arnold where he's kind of really highlighting the tricep, like a side tricep? But you very rarely see it.
Yeah.
Triceps, I'm not saying they were weak, but they weren't outstanding compared to his biceps were absolutely outstanding. In fact,
bicep dominant.
I always tell people when Arnold, in between shows, when he was competing, he would his body would literally disappear. There'd be no delts, no pecs, no thighs. There'd be only two muscles left. The biceps and the calves. That's it. Everything else is gone. I'm serious. But he had this, still have these giant biceps sticking out.
Right.
Now, I will say this because I want to go back to that list again. I can't remember everyone on the list, but I do remember Boyer Coe because I was coming up as a bodybuilder, I remember Boyer Coe. I think I won the world, and Chris Dickerson the same night won the America. It was something like that. And Jerry, you might remember that better, but I remember seeing pictures in the magazines of the two, like the two of them, two different contests, same night. And I remember Boyer Coe, even though he was lacking, and one of the reasons I like Boyer, because I lacked that same midsection structure. I didn't have the classic abdominals like Phil has. He was just fantastic abs, man. But those biceps and triceps of Boyer Coe. Now, granted, it's not a complete balanced looking physique up there. But you talk about arms, man. That guy had some guns, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Some of the best.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even today.
What about Robbie? Because everybody thought, you know, Robbie had the best frontal bicep.
My vote is Robbie first.
Okay.
100%, especially in the 70s. Robbie, I saw that, and that just blew me away.
Yeah.
As a teenager, I saw that, and that just blew me away completely.
Yeah.
I liked Arnold, but he was 6'1". I'm 5'6½". So I looked at Robbie, and I looked at Samir. And between the two of them, I tried to do as much as I could to – look like Robbie in this way or Samir as much as I can. I tried to copy those two physiques.
Yeah.
Robbie is another guy who had very balanced bicep and tricep. And his peak, the peak on his bicep was incredible. Also tremendous, you know.
So, plus he had that tiny waist and he had the good thigh. So he had that flare here and then the flare on the legs.
I mean, he had tremendous and always in shape.
Yeah.
Always looks good. You know, I mean, the only problem with Robbie was, you know, when he competed against Zane, as you know, John, for some reason, he kind of lost it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe 2 days before the contest, he'd start to get a little bit smooth. It's not that he looked bad, but Zane comes in there looking like a freaking ripped statue.
Yeah. And so,
you know, he always managed to beat Robbie because of that. You know, if Robbie, everyone who was around at that time, they always say if Robbie would have came in at his 100% best, he would have beaten Zane. And it's hard to say if that's true or not, but I've heard a lot of people say that.
I saw Lily Haney posted a picture of Robbie yesterday. It had to be like from 75, 76. And he was on that muscle rock, you know, where everybody used to pose. Yeah. But man, he looked incredible. He has that tiny waist, the flaring lats, the great arms, and the great legs. I mean, it was just everything tied in together, you know?
Right, that's true.
Yeah, I think if we put it to a vote using that group, and I'm glad I threw Samir in there because he certainly deserves to be in there. But I think I have to go with Phil on this one. I think Robbie, overall balance at his best, double bicep.
What about Sergio? Would you put Sergio in that group?
No.
At his best? No?
I would not. And I'll tell you why. Sergio had gigantic arms. There's no question about it. I mean,
they're going to
I mean, I used to wonder when I looked at pictures of Sergio, I used to wonder whether he had a shrunken head.
Right.
bicep, Tom. Do you remember that? When he did a double on bicep, his head looked like a pea sometimes.
Disappear.
Yeah. But if you look at, again, if you really are objective and you just look at his arms, he went like big ham-like arms. He didn't have any separation except rare occasions between the bicep and tricep. Strangely, as he got older later on, after his major victories, he's like, for example, that contest where everyone thought he should have won. And was it Essen? Remember the year?
Yeah, with his, Essen, Germany. Yeah.
Essen.
He actually did have separation between his bicep, but most of the time when he flexed the arms, if you look at the photos, they were like big ham-like arms. He didn't have delineation and separation that the other guys, especially a guy like Boyer Coe, like Tom, this guy had separation everywhere. Mm-hmm. Bicep, every possible line and delineation was seen.
And the separation in Boyer's tricep when he hit that shot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, whoa. It's like it stood out as much and separated as much as the bicep, which I always thought was really impressive, really impressive. So I have a question, though, before we really put this to a vote, and maybe we have already. is this primarily 70s? Because there's some guys in the 80s. I mean,
Yeah, mention some guys in the 80s. That's true. That's all right.
Right? If we pull in the 80s a little bit.
We got Lee Haney.
Yeah, we got
Haney. Haney had great front double bicep.
Yeah.
You
know?
And maybe not. I still probably would give it to Robbie Robinson, even over Haney.
I agree. He had better arms. Yeah.
Of course,
you had Mike Christian. You had.
And Mike Christian didn't have a bad upfront bicep, but it wasn't great. His lats were too high, a little too narrow.
Yeah.
Gary Strydom's lats were too narrow for
Lita Brada.
Really great. Yeah. Lita Brada had a great.
Brada's great. Great front double bicep. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
We had Sean Ray. Sean Ray was in the 80s. Bill Hill was in the 80s.
Oh, right.
Bill Hill was an early monster. I remember him.
Yeah.
I became friends with Bill Hill. I remember, well, I think it might have been the Nationals one year. I was in his hotel room. He wanted me to look at his posing routine. And I'm looking at this guy, I'm thinking, my God, this guy's huge.
He was unbelievable.
He had these gigantic thighs, Bill. You got to see him. I mean, you
remember that? Yeah.
This guy reminded me almost like a precursor for Paul Dillette. He was like it's like one of the really thick guys, and Paul took it to a whole different level, Dillette. You know, but we're not talking about the 90s. Yeah. So I can't talk about Paul.
I remember one thing about Phil, and if you notice this, he was very narrow-shouldered considering the size that he had. Yeah. Do you remember that, Jerry?
That's true. That's
very narrow clavicles.
Right. Yeah. That's very true. And I think that's what held him back, to tell you the truth, because the thickness was way above anyone. I mean, I think I was there when he won the Night of the Champions. Very thick.
At that time, no one was that thick.
He definitely set a new standard for that.
Absolutely.
You were right. And that narrow shoulder thing held him back a little bit.
He had, had vascularity and veins everywhere. I mean, the guy looked – and, you know, I'll tell you a funny story quickly about Phil. Years later, I was in New York again to cover the Night of the Champions. I think it was the late 90s or something. And I ran into Phil in a restaurant, Phil Hill, and he came up to me. He said, Jerry, he says, you know, I'm having a problem. I said, what's going on, Phil? He said, I want to go back, you know, and compete, but I just can't get in shape anymore. He says, I just can't get that level of, you know, that I had before. And he says, I think it's because, you know, I think it's because I stayed on the drugs too long, you know, and I don't respond to them anymore. So I said, well, that's very possible, Phil. I said, the only thing I can tell you is lay off them for a while, just train naturally. And then maybe when you go on him again, they'll work. And I never spoke to him afterwards, and he never competed again. So I don't know what happened to him. But
well, you heard that, Jerry.
What? Bill was interesting. What year was that? I'm sorry, John. When I was doing Muscle Sport USA, we did the interview the year of the Nationals. Did he won the heavyweight?
Right.
Did Sean Ray win the overall?
Sean beat him. Yes.
He won the overall.
He did. Okay. Because I remember interviewing Phil. And I thought he said something interesting. I said, so what's in the future for Phil? He said, well, I'm going to take my pro career as far as I can. I'm aiming for the Olympia. I want to win the Olympia. And I said, what's beyond that? What's beyond a bodybuilding career? He goes, I want to become the mayor of Trenton, New Jersey. This was his goal. This was his bigger goal, was politics.
Yeah. I didn't know
if he ever got there or not, but Who knows?
You know, Phil was a well-spoken guy when you spoke to him. He sounded like an intelligent guy.
Very.
I could see him. I mean, look at what Arnold did. Governor of California, you know what I mean? And yeah. I could see him going into politics. You know, he was very well-spoken, Phil.
And he knew how to play it up, too. He would wear – everybody else was wearing, you know, the typical gym wear, warm-up wear after the contest during the interview. He had a cardigan on and the big, thick black glasses.
Yeah, remember the glasses.
Like, you look like you could be the mayor. I don't know, maybe.
The last I heard of him, that he was working as a guard in a prison somewhere, and I don't remember where I heard that. But that was so many years ago, I can't remember who told me. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that was the last I've heard of him.
What about Vince Taylor? Vince Taylor had a great front double bicep.
He did. Vince Taylor.
Absolutely. Incredible arms.
Yeah.
Great
incredible arms.
You know, I'll tell you a quick story about Vince. When I met him, he had just come over from Germany. He was living in Germany, and he was a protege of John Brown. Remember John Brown? John Brown basically saw him. And I guess Vince was originally from Maryland somewhere. And he ran into John Brown, and John Brown convinced him, you know, to go into, but he saw the natural ability of Vince. And, you know, so he'd come over to compete in the Nationals. And I was, again, working for Weider. And I interviewed, me and Julian Schmidt, we interviewed Vince Taylor. And the guy was tremendous. He had a fantastic physique. And he says to me and Julian, he says, you know, I said, just like you asked, Tom, I said to him, what's up for you? What's up the line for you, Vince, in bodybuilding? I mean, you're going to turn pro and this and that? He says, you know, I'm not good enough to be a pro. I said, what? He says, I'm just not as good as these other guys. I just can't, I don't see myself ever beating him. I never forgot that. He wound up competing in God knows how many pro shows. He thought he was not good enough to be even on the stage with these guys.
Oh, dude, he pissed everyone off. And I guess it was 91 Grand Prix post-Olympia. And we were all, you know, it was like 7 countries in 2 weeks. It was nuts. And everybody's like trying to stay in shape, you know. And it was him and Sonny Schmidt, first and second for the first 3-4 shows. Yeah. Well, then Sonny got a hold of some illicit, you know, some stuff. And he went downhill fast. Yeah. But it would piss everybody off because literally he was in incredible shape. And he would get on the bus. We had to take a bus from one country to the other overnight sometimes. And he would get on the bus with 2-3 pieces of pizza, slices of pizza. Anywhere he could get pizza, and it didn't matter if we were in Italy, Germany, he came on the bus with pizza. I think he did it to taunt the rest of us, man. Son of a bitch, man. We're all eating broccoli.
Oh, wow. That reminds me of Eduardo. Remember Eduardo Kowak, guys? You remember?
Oh, of course. I liked Eduardo. What a great guy.
I was covering one of those same Grand Prix tours that you were just talking about, Tom. We were in Essen, Germany again. I became good friends with Eduardo Kowak. You know, he brought me to his gym in Nice and all that. But, you know, we were hanging out in the hotel one night, and he says to me, "Let's get something to eat." So we go in to a. The only thing we could find open was a kind of McDonald's type restaurant. Now remember, the contest was the next day, right? He orders like a bunch of cheeseburgers and fries, and I said, Eduardo, should you be eating this stuff? You got a contest tomorrow morning. I mean, he was just loading up on all this crap. And, you know? And I said to myself, oh my God, he's going to look like crap at the contest. And I, you know, at the contest, the guy looks fantastic. I mean, no water retention, nothing. Those crazy deep abs. Remember those abs he had?
Oh my God, the abs.
I forgot to mention him. I'll mention him in that with Robbie. Eduardo Kowak had a great front double bicep.
He really didn't he?
Great arms.
Great biceps.
Great arms. Incredible arms.
And like you, Phil, he was one of the few guys that could actually, like he had abs in his front double bicep.
While he was stretched
I remember
out,
your front double bicep, Phil. You're like, I'm like, the freaking guy's got his rib cage up and he's still got these deep abs. How's it possible? And Kowak used to do the same thing. We had the same exact look, man. He had a definitely great.
Great body. 88 Olympia was the best condition I'd ever seen him, and he didn't place in the top 16.
No, you got.
How can that? What?
Eduardo had and if you think about it, this guy had one of the most complete physiques.
Yes, sir.
Points.
He had no weak points.
Huh? He had arms, no weak points. Legs, calves, every. How did this guy not do better? I can never figure that out. You know, to me, he had a great physique. You know.
What about Lance Dreher?
Yeah, too much hair.
Oh, Lance Dreher. Sure. Oh, I mentioned him. He had gigantic arms.
Good front double bicep, right?
Very, very good double bicep.
Kind of wide waist, though. A little bit of wide waist.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Lance's problem was he was a little too blocky.
Yeah.
He had thick in the waist. But arm size and mass, tremendous, tremendous.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I think doesn't Lance have a PhD? I mean, last time I met with him, I was at the some Hall of Fame event I was at.
Yeah.
And man, that guy, he is one smart dude.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think he went all the way with his PhD. So based on that, we might have to give him best double bicep. Smartest. We'll give him the smartest front double bicep.
Let's call him most knowledgeable bicep.
Most knowledgeable. I like it. A special category. We're creating a special category for Lance Dreher.
Here's a guy I want to mention I forgot about. To me, Mike Mincer.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous front double bicep with that vacuum.
Yeah, that's true. He had a great vacuum.
He did.
Yeah. Right. Oh, my God.
You know, Mike had a very small looking waist, didn't he? When
he did. Small hips. He had small hips.
Yeah, small hip. Right. You know, really is. I remember the 80 Olympia where he was like standing next to Arnold. He made Arnold look like he had a really thick waist because Mike just looked about 2-3 inches smaller than Arnold. Of course, he was shorter too, but still, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing, John. See, and as I'm looking back now, just in my mind, of Mike Mencher's physique in that front double bicep, it was like a small waist. I thought he had big hips. It was like his waist came down and his hips.
Maybe he had a small waist and big hips. You're right.
He had wide hips for a small waist.
Right. Wide hips, yeah.
No, you're right, Tom. You're right. Yeah. I've noticed that. And they said, well, he has wide hips. They said this years ago. And I said, well, he has a small waist, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, well, his hips are still wide. I'm thinking, if your waist is small.
Who cares?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But it did seem to throw the symmetry a little bit, somehow or other. And then, you know, he wore those big, thick, velvety trunks. It didn't help.
Yeah. Right. He had a great vacuum, though. I remember, like, when he would come out and do his pose routine, I saw some videos of him. And when he would come out with those arms stretched out or the front double bicep, it was like, ooh, it put you back in your seat, you know, because he had that vacuum and he had the huge arms.
There were a few guys back then that could do an overhead vacuum along with Frank Zane and Tony Pearson. And there were a few others who had that tremendous overhead vacuum. And I used to look at that and go, oh, what does it take to do that?
Oh, I know.
And I just...
One of my buddies, you guys all know, and of course, he was a great 80s bodybuilder himself.
I know you're talking about John Defendes.
John Defendes, exactly. Great vacuum. One of the best. One of the best
I've ever seen.
Right. Yep. You know, the funny thing is, the vacuum is coming back today in the so called classic men's competition. And you don't see it in any of the pros. None of the Olympia guys. None of them are doing vacuums. They can't. Not one can do the vacuum. Right? The classic. It's almost becoming like a style, you know, to show that.
Look,
I can do a vacuum. Like this guy who won, whose name I always forget. The guy who just won again. The classic.
The big tall guy. Bumstead. What's his name?
Chris
Bumstead. Bumstead. Yeah,
and that's one of his. And every time he does a double bicep. He does the vacuum every single time. If you look at it,
which is interesting because when you think about classic bodybuilding and you talk about the workouts, every classic bodybuilder from day one practically included heavy pullovers.
We were
expanding the rib cage, right? We wanted to create a bigger torso. John, you've had one of the big. I never saw you do a vacuum. But you got like one of the biggest rib cages, man. Yeah. You must have been doing a lot of those pullovers.
Well, I did those pullovers from 14 years old. I think that's what I did.
I don't know if they're doing them today. It seems like it's an exercise that's kind of forgotten.
They do the thing with the rope. They pull the rope, but they don't do a pullover with a dumbbell.
Yeah, but then again, how many other guys today really can do a great chest pose like Arnold used to do in those guys?
Yeah, we're gonna get to that side chest. Yeah, that's a forgotten pose. Yeah,
you don't see many guys today who look. I mean, Phil Heath does one, but all you see is his arms and shoulders.
It's the arms.
It's. It's not like the old days when the guys had these gigantic, like Reg Park, all these gigantic rib bumps.
Big rib cage. Yeah, it looks so impressive. Yeah
you know.
Well, let's vote. Let's vote on the front double bicep.
Okay. All right.
So, Phil, you're going with Robbie then, right?
Number one, my opinion. Number one, I'll go with that.
How about you, Tom? You go with Robbie too?
I mean, we really threw a lot of guys in the mix, but I think as a whole, Robbie Robinson, man. The tiny waist, the incredible arms, great lats. Yeah.
All right. What about you, Jerry?
I'm going to go with, it looks like I'm kissing ass here, but I have to agree with the other guys. I'm going to go with Robbie.
Okay.
Because again, I'm looking at the, from a medical point, I'm looking at the balance.
Yeah. Well,
the beautiful balance between the bicep and tricep. I mean, half of me wants to give it to Arnold because Arnold had this just tremendous double arm bicep, but he didn't have the balance between bicep and tricep that Robbie has.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to give it to Robbie for that reason.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, John? You get
I'm going to go with Arnold. I'm a big Arnold fan, but I'm thinking of that. I think it was the 70 NABBA Universe. There was a black and white photo of him doing a front double bicep, and he's got the big rib cage. He's got the great arms. He's got the lats, and his legs looked really good then too.
Mm.
So, I mean, just I used to look at that pose all the time, that picture all the time when I was growing up, you know, trying to develop my physique. So I'm going to go with Arnold. So, but it looks like Robbie won that one. 3-1.
You got it. Okay. I'm making notes here.
All right. Let's go with the front lat spread. The three guys I was thinking of, and you guys can jump in, throw in some more guys. Franco Colombo.
Which pose is this one?
Front lat spread.
Front lat spread. Okay.
Robbie Robinson again. And Lee Haney. 70s and 80s. I think those three are pretty standout.
I throw in Freddie Ortiz again. Did you see his lat spread? It was gigantic.
Yeah, it was.
Especially from the back. He would do this thing where he kind of pulling his waist.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And it looked like he had like a 20-inch waist. You know, when he gets lat.
Yeah, he would collapse his wrist, right, when he did it?
Right. Yeah. And he had to bend this lat spread, Freddie.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to throw in him.
You could probably throw in Phil Williams, too.
Sure. I've got another candidate.
What's that?
Brian Buchanan.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
I forgot about Brian.
He made me look like a little kid.
You know what? hey, you know what, Phil? I'm going to cast my vote right now. I'm going with
Brian Buchanan.
Yeah.
Because I saw that person. I saw that guy in person many times, and he did that pose right in front of me. And I remember saying to him in Gold's Gym once, I said, Brian, if I had a waist as small as you, I'd never wear a shirt in the gym. His waist was smaller, and I'm not exaggerating, than most of the women. I'm talking normal sized women in Gold. His waist was so freaking, and this is why I freaked out, Phil. I saw a photo of him online. Maybe you guys saw it too. A photo taken maybe within the last 2 years or so. He's a big fat guy now.
He's obese in the photo. I saw that photo.
That's hard to believe. That's unbelievable.
Oh, I saw that.
And you know what?
It was his face.
Right.
From the neck down.
Yeah. Now,
but you see, the thing is, this is a guy that I never would have imagined. You know, some guys gain weight when they stop competing or whatever, get a little thick around the waist, whatever. But his waist was so small. I could never imagine this guy ever being obese. But he told me something once, which kind of gave it away. I said to him, Brian, you must have this waist you have. It's got to be genetic. I've never seen any normal sized man with a waist your size. I said, your parents must have had very small waists, right? He said, they were short and fat, Jerry. That's what he told me.
Mom might have had a visit from the milkman. It's possible. It doesn't sound right to me.
Milkman with the tiny waist.
But I will tell you this: when I was competing in Rimini, Italy, for the Olympia in '89, we were, my training partner and I were there, and it was a day or two before, and we're like looking for a place to get some food where we can bring back to the hotel. You can't go out; you got to bring stuff back to the hotel. So we're like rummaging through this little shop. And in walks Brian Buchanan in a tank top. I looked at my training partner. I'm like, let's just fucking go get some. Let's just get some pastries. It's over. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm going to be standing next to this guy.
you see the thing,
crazy,
about,
man.
Thing about Brian that really made the front lat spread look so great was the small waist.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
It's not that he didn't have a good lat spread or anything like that, but the tiny waist made his lats look just – it looked like he could fly away with those freaking things.
Absurd. We probably could have put him in the front double bicep pose too, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. And he might have beat Robbie.
That was a freaky
pose. He might have beat Robbie in that.
Yeah. Too late. No going back.
Yeah, we gotta do it again.
we spent 45 minutes. We can't do
it. You know, the thing I remember about Brian also is that this guy did not take losing very well. He was a very bad loser.
Really?
When he held the Olympia in L.A., remember that? What was that, 88?
88. We were there together. Jerry, you and I.
That's right. But I remember talking to Brian after the contest, and he was very sarcastic a lot of times too. Like at that contest, he came up to me, and the guy knew me. We were kind of friends. And he says to me, Jerry, when are you going to start training? He said in front of a bunch of people, you know, which trying to embarrass me. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I had a good comeback. I said to him, well, as soon as you get calves, Brian, you know.
And, oh, there you go.
That hit him right between the legs, man.
his jaw stopped him right in the butt, right? But I remember after the contest, I spoke to him again, and he was freaking so angry. He thought he should have won. He says, the guys, he says, no, I don't, John, I don't remember what he placed in that show, but I know.
Second behind Christian. Mike Christian won, and he got second, I think.
I'm talking about the 88 Olympia.
He was eighth.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He was eighth.
Eighth. Okay. Yeah.
And he thought he should have been in at least the top five, he told me. He says, I don't know what's wrong with these guys. I mean, and he mentioned some of the other guys in the show that he should have been, but he was furious. I mean, the guy, he says, you know, I'm ready to quit this whole thing. He said, and that really surprised me. That's what he told me. He was very mad.
I had the videotape of that 88 Olympia, and it shows the prejudging at the beginning, and they were calling three guys up at a time to be compared. And he was called up a few times, like with Gaspari and I think Labrada. So he was being compared to the top guys.
Right. Phil, were you in that? Were you in the 88?
Oh, no. I bowed out 2 weeks before the show. Because I'd won the Chicago 3 weeks before, and then couldn't maintain the condition. And I was just
3 weeks. Yeah, that's a tough one to hold, man. No question. Yeah. A week, 2 weeks. Yeah. Okay.
A week, maybe, but 3 weeks. Yeah, that was too much.
That's tough, man.
Yeah, I agree.
What about Lee Haney in that pose?
Front lat spread, one of the best. One of the best on the planet. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, it's like I said earlier, I believe with Lee Haney, a great bodybuilder overall, but the thing that really made him win the Olympia, I believe it's 8 times, am I right?
Yes.
Was I think more than anything else was his back development, both front and rear. Mm-hmm. He just had tremendous back detail, and he had a tremendous lat spread from the front, and it just overwhelmed everybody.
I'm going to tell you something funny, Jerry. You'll remember this. We were looking at guys from the front and the rear, but when they turned to the side, Lee was the only one who had development from the side. His thickness matched his width,
right,
and no one else's did.
That's true. That's very true. Very true.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture. I can't share the screen, but I'm looking at a picture of Lee Haney. It was taken, you know, you guys have seen this one, taken probably in front of Better Bodies in Manhattan, on the streets of Manhattan, the steam coming out of the
like this.
He's got his jeans on, and it is just
incredible
front lat spread.
One of the greatest bodybuilding pictures ever, I think.
Great pick. Great picture. So
that's what you call an iconic picture for sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Robbie looked amazing in that pose because he had that tiny waist too and the big glass. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's very true.
Yeah. I would say Robbie, the three of those guys have, you got Robbie, you got Brian, and you got Lee. Three of the best front lat spreads in the business that I know of.
What about Franco? Can we include Franco?
It could be from the back. I would say he could beat all of them.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But from the front, I don't think so.
Okay. I agree with Paul about that. There was something about it from the front. Maybe it's because his pecs were, and you know, it was so overpowering. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It almost like it kind of hit his lat spread. But when he turned to the rear, do you remember that scene in Pumping Iron where Franco's posing on stage and Danny Villa is sitting in the audience?
Yeah.
And Franco's doing a rear lat spread, and Padilla goes, holy shit, I can't, you know, Padilla was like startled. He just couldn't believe Franco back. Remember that scene?
Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
So who was on the list again? So we got Lee Haney, we got Brian Buchanan. Who else?
Robbie
Robinson, right? Franco Colombo.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else? Schwarzenegger couldn't, I don't know. I mean, he's not really in the top five, I think.
Not in that pose, no.
Not in that pose, I agree. That was.
Yeah.
Was, Arnold was pretty passable, but I wouldn't say he's a standout.
And even another great, Surgeon Bray, we haven't even talked about him. It was a good last spread, but it wasn't the greatest last spread.
What about Sergio? You think Sergio would be on that list? He was so thick, and he was wide, and he had a tiny waist.
I'm trying to remember a picture of him in the last spread. I know I've seen one.
Yeah. If you look at the picture of him coming to mind. When he's on the front, the Essence shot, he's doing the front last spread, you know, the black and white.
Yeah.
I mean, I would include him. Looking at that picture, I would go, oh, shit, who is? I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, yeah.
I can look at that picture today and get as excited about it as I did when I was 17 or 16, right?
Phil, isn't that amazing? I'm the same way. Like, when I see an old bodybuilding picture, especially one I haven't seen before, I feel like I'm 14 years old again.
Get all over again.
Right.
That's great. Absolutely. And
we're all from about the same generation, the same era.
Yeah.
Did you guys also have like a stack of magazines or like a
yeah.
I had like a stack of magazines like coming up. It was about here. It was like you were class. I was like, every night, every day. That was what I would look at and read, you know?
Absolutely.
You know, the thing about Sergio though, that I think we'll all agree on, nobody ever in bodybuilding history topped him when he went like this. Did you ever see lats that big with the arms overhead?
Yeah.
I showed that picture to Arnold, and I think it was when Sergio won the Olympian in 69. I got an issue of, talk about magazine, I had the issue of Iron Man had just come out, and they had a picture of Sergio winning that show in that famous signature pose. And Arnold and I were working out of Vince's gym then, and I showed the magazine to Arnold. And I'll always remember what he said. He said, nobody will ever beat this guy. This is Arnold talking about Sergio. He was so startled by that picture. It's jaw-dropping. He just couldn't believe. He said, how can a guy's lats look that big with his arms overhead like that? He was like startled by it, you know. Of course, Arnold wound up beating him, but that's another story.
All right, so we're going to vote. Jerry, what do you think? Who's your choice?
I'm going to have to go with Brian Buchanan, you know, because just freakishly small, that the lats look like you could go on forever, you know. But that's a tough one because the other guys are right up there too. But I'd have to give a slight edge to Brian Buchanan.
Okay. What about you, Tom?
I'm going to go with Lee Haney on this one.
All right.
He's a little bit, you know, he's in the same generation, the same era as Brian.
80s,
you know, and a lot of those other guys were competing with him. But I'm going to have to give it to Lee Haney. I'm looking at that picture still and just like, outstanding.
Yeah,
it's one of the best. Yeah,
Phil, what do you think?
As far as a classic look, I'm going to go with Haney. But as far as a freakish look, I'm going to go with Brian.
Okay.
Brian's picture. The first time I saw a picture of him, this kid from England, who was a workout partner of mine, he showed it to me. I said, "That's not a real photo." I said, "Somebody took scissors." No, I told him this. I said, "Someone took scissors and cut that out." And he goes, "No, this is a real photo." I said, "Well, who is he?" He told me who he was, and I said, "Well, how old is he?" He said, "He's 19." And this was Mr. Britain. He took second in the Mr. Britain when he was 19. He should have won. The guy that beat him should have never even taken third.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I almost wanted to go home. I wanted to go back to Kansas City. And we were in Santa Monica, well, Venice at that time. I just saw that, and I just think, I've never looked that good.
You know, what's funny, guys? It kind of reminds me of what you're saying, Phil. About, you know, you didn't believe the photo. You know, Betty Weider, Joe's wife. You know what I'm about to say.
They
used to take photos of Betty Weider, right? This is before they had computers in Photoshop, right? And Betty, she had this small waist anyway, right? But Joe would want the people up in the Weider office to make her waist look even smaller. So they would take, like, white paint or something.
Wow.
White up.
I remember that.
The funny thing was, it would show up in the photos. You can see the paint that they, you know, that whatever it was.
Oh, really?
It's hilarious to see that. But, but it was so unnecessary because this woman literally had a wasp waist. She had a very small waist. But I don't know what Joe insisted on. I don't know what the deal was.
It did look freakishly small in those pictures.
Didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
John, what do you think? This could be a tiebreaker.
I'm going to go with Haney.
Haney, all right.
That was just a standout pose for him and all the Olympias, you know, and then that one picture, Tom, like you said, that was a crazy picture.
Yeah.
He had the combination of that thickness, the chest, the shoulders, the lats were incredible, and then he had that tiny waist. So, yeah. So Phil, you going with Haney or Brian Buchanan?
Like I said, they're different.
Yeah,
but they're both two of the best. So I'm gonna say I'm gonna go with the freak factor and say Brian.
Okay. Ooh.
I'll go that way.
We got a tie, right?
That ties it. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to side chest. So three guys I wrote down was, of course, Arnold, one of the greatest side chests ever. Lee Haney again. And I was thinking also Lou Ferrigno.
I'll go with Arnold.
I go with Arnold, too, right off the bat. Arnold was tremendous in that pose.
Anybody else in contention? Any other guys I didn't mention?
Got to be somebody else in there.
Sure. I think Robbie had a great side chest. Because you remember the Serratus?
I think Robbie was the first one to do it differently, right? He was the one to crunch down.
Exactly.
No, everybody crunched
that sticks out in my mind. It's not the most massive, but I mean, as far as classic and beauty,
yeah,
I'm going to throw that in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I tell you, I'm going to have to this is another stretch, but this is one of my favorite physiques. And he came up through the 70s and really shined in the 80s quite a bit. Was Benfato? Francis Benfato.
Sure.
The guy had, just from the side chest, just the separation and the aesthetics, the lines, great arms.
Beautiful physique.
In fact, his front double biceps should have been up there as well.
I forgot about him.
I love his side chest. Love it.
Benfato is still in great shape today. Still in great shape, Benfato.
He is.
In some ways, he looks even better than he did years ago. He's a little bit, it's amazing.
In fact, he got bigger, didn't he? He got thicker.
He actually did. He's bigger.
Yeah, for a while, he got real big, yeah.
He's gone completely opposite of most guys. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He contacted me a while back, and he told me he had this special system, and I told him to write, let me know what it is and I'll write it up, but he never got back to me, so I don't know what it was.
What about Gary Strideham? He had a good side chest. He was a big guy.
Indeed. Yeah, Gary had a great side chest.
Real thick chest. He had good delts.
Yeah, beautiful pecs, delts.
Yeah.
Traps.
His side chest was interesting, though, because he didn't have a big rib cage.
No.
Yeah, it was a different, like you said, it was a little bit closer to what Robbie did. Robbie Serratus, though. I mean, he just can't.
That was
that was good. Yeah. Lee Labrada had a great side chest.
Yes. There's another one.
No. Those I'm picking all the smaller. They're all a little shorter than me. I like that.
You yourself had a tremendous side chest shot.
Thank you.
Excellent. It was excellent. Seriously.
I've got something hanging over here.
Yeah, I see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My wife made me put that up.
He helped you hang it up there.
Tommy, you have also had one of the best front double biceps.
Yeah, you had a great front double.
You had a great front double bicep. You had the shoulder to width differential and the thigh sweep from the front. You had the calves. Yeah. That was incredible.
That's very complimentary. I certainly wouldn't put myself in top five contention, but thank you. I appreciate that. When we get to best back biceps, Phil, I'm going to be all over it, man. My vote.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
Seriously. Jeez.
So what about Ferrigno when he was not just the 70s, but like, remember in the 80s when he was doing the Hercules movies and he had the
beard? He was in shape.
Not the 90s when he made his comeback, but in the 80s, he got real big. Remember when he did the Hercules? He looked unbelievable in some of those gym shots.
I've seen some of those shots.
The beard?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's right up there too with Arnold as far as,
he had very similar pose. Right. Big rib cage, huge pecs, huge arms.
These are big men.
Yeah. Louis and Arnold had those kind of what they call slab pecs. Beef on their which surprised me because, like I said earlier, in between shows, Arnold's pecs would disappear. They'd be like,
That was weird. That was really weird.
The guy had those huge slab pecs, and then 4 months later, there's nothing but nipples left. I mean,
Yeah, you're right, Jerry, because when he retired after 75, I remember, he was guest posing, and you could tell he was off everything. Because he was down to like 210, 215. Yeah. He had no pecs at all. It was totally flat.
Yeah. If we're talking about pecs alone, you definitely have to mention Serge Nubre, who had just the most.
Yeah.
Well, talk about, this is a guy who you can actually put the appellation beautiful physique.
Yeah.
It's hard to use the word beautiful in terms of a man. It usually goes with a woman. But this guy had this just beautiful physique, and his pecs were just so upper, lower, just perfect balance pectorals, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think he had much of a rib cage, if I remember correctly, surgical grade.
Yeah, he really didn't. But I'll tell you, he really knew how to highlight that aesthetic physique.
That's true.
You know, I mean, can you imagine Sergio Bray today doing what these guys do? You couldn't even picture it. It would be ridiculous.
Serge looked beautiful. Stand and relax. All he had to do is almost stand and relax and twist the hips the way he did and flex.
Arnold, statuesque.
Nobody can do that.
Arnold told me once again, I know I keep breaking up Arnold, but Arnold told me once, he said, standing relax, Serge Dubray beats everybody in the world, including me. That's what he said.
Yeah.
I said, what happens when he starts posing, Arnold? He says, then he loses.
He did. Just don't move. Stand, relax. You'll win everything. Yeah. That's right.
Are we going with Arnold on that one then? Is it pretty unanimous?
I think Arnold. I'd go with Arnold on that side chest.
Yeah. I'd go with Arnold on side chest.
I would too. Yeah. It's all memorable.
Yeah. And there's so many pictures of him hitting that pose that he looks amazing. I mean, I remember there was a picture when he was like 20. He looked unbelievable hitting that side chest. Remember that one, that black and white one?
We do, yeah. I think we all do. I think we've all seen those photos of him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the one with Franco in the back. It had to be 74, 75.
Oh, he's standing looking like.
Gym. Yeah, right. Exactly. Today, that pose freaks me out. That picture freaks me out.
Right, that's it. That's the look.
That's the look, man.
Unbelievable.
I love that. Okay, just a quick notable real quick. I mean, some of those pictures out of, I mean, Phil, I know everybody. I mean, the pictures that came out of Gold's Gym at that time, Artie Zeller, some of the other stuff that was winding up in Pumping Iron, the book and stuff. Just how about the inspiration that provided for all of us?
Oh, man.
Is that on those black and whites?
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Etched into our minds, man. Yeah. It's today, it's still the ideal.
50 years later, and we still can remember every detail.
Wow. Yep. Yeah. Man, never forget him.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to side triceps. Now, I was trying to think of some good ones here. That's kind of a different kind of pose. I thought Frank Zane had a good side tricep. Chris Dickerson had a really good side tricep.
Ooh, I was going to mention. I didn't think you'd bring him up. Great call. Chris,
I think Serge Dubray, you know, he could have a good side tricep. Albert Beckles had a good side tricep.
He did. Beautiful.
And Boyer Coe. Those are mostly 70s guys. I'm sure there's some guys in the 80s that I'm probably passing over.
Who was it you mentioned before, Jerry? The younger, the guy with the biceps. What was it, Larry Scott and Ortiz?
Ortiz, yeah.
The Ortiz.
Had a great side tricep.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's true. It's true. Arnold definitely is not in that one. He's not.
No. I've seen some pictures of Arnold like from early, like the one he lost to Chet Yorton, and then when he competed against Dennis Tenorino in 67, he was doing the side tricep, and it looked good. He had a good side tricep. I don't know why he didn't hit it later in his career as much.
Sure. This is a little tougher one to pick, you know?
Yeah, it is, because it's not
I'm thinking about Samir Benoot, you know, because he had all those – remember, Phil, he had all those striations?
Cross-striations, I do.
And he had a low tricep down to his elbow. And
exactly, yes.
And although he didn't have the definition of the other guys, you got to mention, it's a little earlier, but I guess you could say 70. Bill Pearl had a tremendous tricep development. It wasn't as defined as the others.
Yeah. But,
you know, the very you guys talk about the pictures inspiring. The thing that that really got me into bodybuilding more than anything, I saw a picture of Bill Pearl. You guys might remember this. He's wearing a tank top, and it's showing his arm. And I'm staring. I said, "What is that?" I've never seen a human arm. It looked like a side of ham hanging off his shoulder. What the hell is that? And I remember the caption. It said, "Bill Pearl has 21.5-inch arms." 21.5-inch arms? I said, that's as big as my leg. And this guy became my idol right then and there. You know what I mean? So, I was actually originally inspired to train by Bill Pearl's triceps.
I remember that picture distinctly. It kind of looked like, Well, Rick Valente's got a little bit of tricep going on too, doesn't he?
Tremendous arms. Tremendous arms.
Quite a bit like that. Like
to this day,
the Pearl picture.
To this day, his arms are still
They're still that big.
Yeah.
Rick, you and Rick were pretty good. I don't know how you guys are today, but I remember being backstage with you at the Nationals helping you out and stuff. And I was like, yeah, man.
Yeah, we've been friends before. He got me my first job when I came to California.
No kidding.
Yeah, we haven't been in touch, but we follow each other on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see Rick every blue moon.
Right. You know? Cool. I'm gonna have to throw him in there as one of the best triceps.
Oh, he's one of the best.
Rick Valente had a freakish tricep. It's really true. And I saw a picture of him just taken 2 days ago. He's back. He's at Gold's Gym. They opened up Gold. He still has a gigantic tricep.
Yeah, still has it. Yeah.
Same.
Huge.
Yeah. I'm going to give you one more that you guys might not think about. Muhammad Makawe.
Yeah.
He had beautiful triceps.
Yeah.
God, what a great
Every time he turned to the side, he'd always hit that tricep pose in a three-quarter back.
Yeah.
And when he had a lot of unique poses.
Yeah, when he did those transitions in his posing, he always emphasized those triceps.
Yeah, unique poses that were, you know, not basic or standout, but, I mean, they were so unique that he looked incredible. So he found out how to look the best in unique poses. But if you look at the basic standard poses from the back and from other, you know, maybe from the side, he wasn't that great.
Yeah.
But his triceps were tremendous. He had tremendous arms for a little guy.
Yeah, he did. Lee Labrada had a great side tricep pose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leah definitely had a great
very aesthetic. He had good mass in his arm. He had big arms, totally, but good abs from the side. You know, he had a good side tricep pose.
There was a shot taken not long ago. I think Lee was probably in his 50s already, and I just came across it recently. I was taken by Mike Nephew out in California. Of and you know, he's got his hair is much shorter and he's older, he's already successful with his line, and he's just showing that tricep with a t-shirt on. And man, it looks freaking great. Veins. I mean, the guy looks fantastic. Great.
Yeah.
Like, man, he still got it.
Yeah, it's true.
What about Chris Dickerson? He looked amazing in that.
Chris had beautiful, beautiful triceps.
He's a guy that's always criticized for having small arms, but I think that was more his biceps. But
more his biceps, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great pose for him. I remember that was always one of his best poses.
Yeah, he did.
Well, his legs, too, really enhanced everything from the side. Yeah. His legs, his calf.
Yeah,
so good, but his arm definitely looked good from the side, big time.
Yep,
this is a tough one, man.
Yeah,
that's a real tough one. That's a tough call.
How about Frank Zane? That was a great pose for him too.
Very aesthetic and very pleasing. Beautiful triceps. Mm-hmm.
He had great triceps too.
We go to the classic look or freaky look. So that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking more.
Yeah.
You know, this guy was freakier, but this was more of a classic pose.
Yeah.
So I mean, depending on the guy.
Even Samir, we got to go back to Samir.
Samir, beautiful triceps.
And he knew how to hit that pose, man. He brought it out. And again, the striations and the shoulder.
That pose,
like you said, Tom, that pose, you got to know how to hit it for your physique. Because that's a pose that can look either bad or good, depending how you twist, you know, and how you show off, you know, your strong point. You don't even have – sometimes I've seen guys with – average triceps look good in that pose because they've got good intercostals and they could twist right, and their chest looks good in that pose. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know about anybody else, Phil. For me, I worked on that pose like I can't even tell you countless hours of a little rotation here. Should I grab the two fingers or the three? Elbow out a little bit to bring out that rear delt. I mean, it was just fine-tuning. Pose particularly, man.
Yeah.
That wasn't one of my better poses, the side triceps. My triceps, I'm bicep dominant.
Me too.
And always have been. I never had to train my biceps.
Yeah.
But trying to get my triceps to catch up with what I didn't train with my biceps, but was hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember for a few years, I didn't train biceps all year until 6 weeks before the show.
Yeah.
Because they just grew from my back training, you know?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Your back, no wonder.
But I remember the last time I competed, I was 53, and I've noticed as I've gotten older, my triceps they're not as good. I mean, I've really got to work them hard just to maintain them, you know.
Yeah.
My biceps are still there, but my triceps, I've really got to work them hard. So when I was competing that last time, when I did that side tricep pose, I twisted so much you couldn't see the tricep. You just saw my abs and my chest, you know. I did the pose, and it was a good pose. but my triceps were weak, but I just like twisted so much. I kind of pushed them out of the way, you know?
I think part of that is as we get older, we're let's face it, the triceps play such a big role in the bench press, the incline, the dumbbell presses.
Yeah.
As we get older, we start to use a little less weight. We're a little more cautious. We're not using the poundage.
Yeah.
So the tricep just tends to take a little bit of a back seat, I think. It's not working as hard.
Yeah. I'll tell you another thing I've noticed. I have extremely long arms.
Mm-hmm.
So the older you get, you know what happens, right? You're not going to carry that mass in the arms. My triceps are poor.
Yeah.
I train them hard, but I mean, just having long arms, longer than usual, I have a short torso and very long limbs.
Mm.
And it's hard to retain that mass once you get past 50.
Yeah,
agreed.
Very difficult.
Very true. By the way, I've heard one other name. It goes way back, but most of you guys will probably remember this guy, Chuck Sipes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Sure.
He had a beautiful side tricep shot. I mean, I think he actually even had cross cuts in his tricep. You know, he was really big on doing heavy bench presses.
Heavy bencher, yeah.
In his tricep, if you look at photos, and he had a great side tricep shot. Very good.
Yeah, I remember reading one of those old articles. I think it was the day before one of those Mr. Olympias where he competed. The day before at Mid-City Gym, he worked out. And he did like a 505 bench for 3 reps or something the day before the contest.
Wow.
I saw Chuck Sipes. I was at Mid-City Gym one year, you know, when he walked in. He walked into the gym and I recognized him right away from the magazines. And I you know, I kind of like admired the guy.
Yeah.
But I was so intimidated by the guy, you know, that I was afraid to come up to him. I never said a word to him. And I heard he's a really nice guy, but I never got to know because but he was great shape. He just walked in, you know, worked out. I didn't say a word.
He was always smiling. Every picture you see of Chuck Sipes, he was like, he never like deadly serious, but he does look like a guy. He looks like an iron worker. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean,
he's like a tough guy. Yeah.
He's like tough looking guy, man.
Outdoorsman or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy used to like climb trees and go in the woods and all that.
That's what he looks like. He looks like that kind of guy.
He was like a so-called man's man type of thing. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
I remember reading that he committed suicide. Did you know that, Jerry?
Yeah, that's what I heard too. Yeah.
Okay.
Chuck Sipes had a real problem with depression. Depression, and the story I heard was that you know he apparently you know left his wife and kids for some other woman, and you know the kids didn't want to talk to him and this and that, and he was already depressed to begin with, and it just got too much for him. He wound up killing himself. That's what I heard.
Well, Steve Mihalik went that same round. That was sad.
Yeah. That I didn't know that. Ago. Steve Mihalik killed himself, Tom?
A couple of years ago, yeah.
I didn't know he did. I didn't know what he died of.
I remember Steve Mihalik coming up to me also in the gym, and he was talking. He was absolutely madly in love with his wife, whose name I don't remember. But I remember him telling me something about how, you know, she was going to leave him. He had a little kid with her. And he said, you know, he was telling me how it hit him so hard that he had to go into shock therapy. He says he could not function. He says he just lost it completely. He says, Jerry, I completely lost my mind. Wow. And I really felt so bad for the guy, you know, when he was telling me this story, you know, because now he was back working out and stuff. And when I heard that he killed himself, I wasn't that surprised because I remembered that conversation I had with him.
You know? Yeah, it was interesting. He went to work with John Defendez down in Florida for a while. Right. Him and John were like that intensity or insanity team. You know, they would
remember that. Yes,
mad crazy.
Well, you know, Steve had a gym in Long Island where he trained
Defendez in Mr. America's gym. Yeah,
yeah.
He do these crazy things like 70, 80 sets of
I was sort of it was like two factions. One was Future Man. It was Tony Pandolfo. I don't know if anybody remembers
that. Tony Pandolfo, absolutely
great champion. He became my mentor, and he owned a gym called Future Man. Right. And across town was Mr. America, Steve Mihalik's gym. And Future Man was sort of like to settle down. There was no talk of drugs. There was none of that stuff. And Mihalik was like the opposite. You walked in and you signed in with a syringe. You know what I mean? Just like, that's just it. And it was about upping the dosage. It was always about upping the dosage.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll tell you a funny story. I'll never forget this. I used to talk to Bob Gruskin.
Oh, yeah. Bob. Yeah.
Right? And we became friends when I was a teenager. After the 78 Teenage Mr. America, we started calling each other. He called me. I'd call him. And he told me that he goes, they were back then, supposedly, And I wouldn't think he'd lie, taking over 1,000 milligrams a week of tests, this and that. And I'm thinking, well, nobody could do that. They would die.
You would die. Yeah.
Right? That was unheard of back then.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
I think he was doing it, man.
No, it's one of Halleck's proteges, his name I don't remember offhand. This guy had very big arms too, but you know, Halleck, I guess, coached him on the drugs too. This guy was like 21 years old and completely lost his hair.
I know who you're talking about. You're talking about Andy Lopadotti.
I competed against Andy.
Yeah. Andy was good. He could have been great.
He was a monster. Yeah.
Like, he was completely bald. He lost all his hair from the, you know, I guess he didn't know the drugs do that, you know.
In his early 20s, though.
Yeah, exactly. Right, you know.
Jeez. In the 79 Teenage Mr. America, where Lee Haney won, I beat Lee 4 months earlier.
Wow.
And then at the Teenage America, I go in there, and I'm thinking, okay, there's Doug Brignole. I knew who he was. Frank Pantoja, I knew who he was. There's two California kids, one's from Bill Pearl's, one's training under Rory Liedermeyer, and then the two from New York is Andy Lopadotti and Joe Fulco.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I knew them both well, yeah.
And I saw Andy had a sweatsuit on, and there was veins sticking through
the arms. Sweatsuit. He had some arms, didn't he? As a teenager?
Oh, my God.
Hey, do you guys remember when Steve Mihalik took out a notarized statement in Iron Man saying that he never used drugs of any kind? That was the biggest laughing stock in bodybuilding.
Everybody knew.
Everybody in bodybuilding knew that Steve was one of the biggest. Yeah. And I can't understand to this day why he did that. It made no sense at all.
None, really.
Why call attention to it? You know, it's like,
all right.
I don't want to mention names, but it's like there's a current guy who, you know, who's so-called natural. You know, he claims to be natural. Nobody believes him. He's like 55 years old. You guys already know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about. Yes.
this guy who's also, you know, he's a friend of mine too. I mean, we're not close, but I like the guy personally, but this guy gets better as he gets older. And as you were saying earlier, when you get past 50, things usually start going backwards.
This guy is
getting better and he swears he doesn't use anything. But here's the thing. Nobody believes him. Nobody.
Nobody in their right mind anyway.
Right. It doesn't matter, Jerry. He's making money and he's popular. And
I've actually been attacked online because I stick up for the guy. You know, what I say is this. I say, look, I said, he could be what they call an outlier. He could, you know, I know this guy is phenomenally strong. He is. He's really strong. I mean, heavy benches, heavy squats. I said, you know, he could be one of these freakish guys. And unless you've seen him, as I'm writing this, I'm feeling stupid even writing this. unless you've seen him using the drugs, you can't accuse him. Boy, did they fucking. I said to myself, I'm never going to defend this guy again. That was
Jerry, don't you think even if he is an outlier, you still don't get better after 50 than you were at 30?
Very, very unlikely.
You're lucky if you can just hold on to a little bit of it.
You can look at like Arnold, Lee Haney, Ronnie Coleman. These are all genetic freaks. Nobody better after 50.
You know, there are two guys that I feel bad about not mentioning because they were, both of them became sort of like amateur legends. They never turned pro.
Oh, yeah.
One of them we just mentioned, and I bet you guys know who they are. Both competed in the nationals at the highest level. One did against Lee Haney. I think maybe the other did as well.
I can guess. I know who you're talking about. I'm going to say Rory Liedermeyer and Matt Mendenhall, but maybe I'm wrong.
Right. Yeah. Exactly who I'm thinking about. Yeah. And they were both, I mean, either one, Rory Liedermeyer, such a, talk about aesthetics.
Yeah.
That's
a side tricep right there. Yeah. Rory Liedermeyer. Yeah.
Very true. Rory had a great side tricep.
Great side tricep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, Rory,
what a look.
And you know, yeah. Not only that, Tom, you know, I don't know if you remember, Rory was one of the first guys to have that great leg bicep from the side.
Yeah.
I used to joke with Rory because he was training guys like Bob Paris and some of these other guys, his name I don't remember. Every time you see them in a contest, when they did the side pose, they all had that bulging leg bicep.
Yeah.
I said to Rory, I can always tell a guy that you train, Rory, because they have those huge leg biceps that stand out.
Yeah.
Yeah. He says, you know, I make him do a lot of sets, leg curls and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. Rory was another strong SOB. Still is probably.
Yeah.
God, that guy was strong.
Well, he still trains hard. Rory still trains hard.
Yep.
No, he's still good.
Remember John Araneta?
That was a miniature version of Rory.
That was one of the guys I was trying to think of. That was one of his proteges.
Yeah. And Frank Pantoja, right? Like you said, Phil, he was training under Rory.
Frank Pantoja.
Yeah.
He looked like Frank Zane, a very similar to Zane type physique. And he won the middleweight that year that Lee won the overall. Frank Pantoja. So he beat Doug Brignole, Joe, and Andy. And I was fifth. I ended up in fifth place.
My God, you know, I mean, you can't talk about the 70s and 80s without there's just so many.
Yeah.
There's just so many guys, you know, that were so good. It was, I mean, those two guys, Moses Maldonado, I'm sure you remember Moses Maldonado.
Oh, whatever happened to Moses?
He won the light heavyweights.
Right.
To the world.
Lost.
Didn't win, came back to win the, instead of turning pro, came back to win the Nationals again. And unfortunately, I was there, and so was J.J. Marsh and some of the others. Oh, and he couldn't pull it off again. And
Rich Gaspari.
Gaspari beat him, too. When Gaspari won, he got second.
The last I heard of Moses, he was leading the Israelites across the Red Sea.
I tell you what, Moses, and this isn't disparaging. This is the game. This is the game of psychology and sports psychology. And I remember the I guess it was the year you won, Phil.
Yeah.
It was 85. Moses was in that. I think he took third. I was second.
You were second. JJ was third.
JJ was third. Moses was fourth.
I believe.
I remember, I'm going into this thing because I remember you and I, do you remember? I hate to diverge, but I have to. I don't get a chance to chat with Phil too often about reminiscing about that experience because it was a great experience. I remember you and I were called out like once or twice, and then that was it. We were never called out again.
We stood in the background and just waited.
That's right.
Prejudging to finish for our class.
Neither one of us really knew. I mean, we had some ideas. You know, we both thought we had it. You thought you had it. And I'm literally pumping. It was the night show, getting ready to do my routine, which I worked long and hard on, right? Getting oiled up and stuff. Moses comes up. She said, "Hey, you really look good. Congratulations. You're up in there." You know, he goes, "Unfortunately, I spoke to the judges. You're second." This is just before I'm ready to go out.
Unbelievable.
I'm like, you son of a bitch.
You did your routine, right?
I'm like, all right, shake it off. Shake it off. Maybe he's wrong. Maybe he's just trying to psych me out, you know?
Wow.
Sure enough, he was right. But, oh, the game.
Yeah. Absolutely. I remember that well. I went right behind you in the free round.
Mm.
Posing round. You went out me, and I watched you. And when you're done, I went, oh, fuck. I got to follow this.
That's exactly how I felt with you, man.
you guys were both awesome posers.
Yeah. I mean, I was asking my girlfriend and my training partner at the time. I'm like, what do you think? And they're like, we don't know, man. The guy's got a back. He's got an incredible back. Anyway, I reminisce. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's good conversation. It's fun. Yeah. We never had a chance to talk about it.
No, we didn't. Yeah. It was such a mutual experience, you know?
Yeah.
It was cool. I remember the pump up room. I'm like glancing over at you, and you're like, and you're working with, Rick's helping you out, and it was just such a great experience, man.
Yeah.
And again, it's you pulled the best out of me, and I hope I inspired you in doing.
You did. Oh, but for my friend, you kept me awake for months. And I kid you not when I say that you kept me awake for months.
Wow.
It was nights I couldn't sleep where I'd sit in a chair and I'd just. I don't know. I just couldn't sleep. I had anxiety from it, I guess.
I love it, man. My training partner was Phil Williams. Phil Williams trained harder than you right now. He's out in L.A. He's squatting twice as much weight as you. I'm like, all right.
Wasn't that great, though, before social media? We just imagined what the other guy was doing or imagined what the guy was, how he was training or how he looked, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember distinctly it was about 2 months, about 8-10 weeks out from the contest, from the Nationals that year. And my very dear friend, Randy, she was my brother's girlfriend, my twin brother's girlfriend. And she had just come back from California. She was training at Gold's Gym. And she comes back, we're on the beach. She joins me on the beach. I'm laying there. She's like, how's your training going? I'm like, good. It's going great. I feel great, man. She goes, and she's looking me up and down. She goes, yeah, you look pretty good. She goes, well, I just got back from Gold's Gym. And I saw Phil Williams training. And she says, you got some work to do. I'm like, oh, man, thanks. I appreciate the brutal honesty.
Wow.
She said exactly that. She's, you got some work to do.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, man. That was inspiring. Anyway.
All right, so let's vote. What do you think, guys? Phil, what do you think? Side tricep?
Side tricep? Oh, geez. I'm going to – you know what? I saw Samir hit a side tricep in front of me, and I was shocked. So I'm going to go with Samir.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Samir.
Jerry, what do you think?
I have to agree with Phil. I'm going to – because I also saw Samir when he was training for the Olympia the year that he won. I saw him quite a bit. And like I said, before him – I don't think I ever saw cross striations like that all over the track. And it just looked like something from outer space. So, you know, and he had all three heads fully developed. I'm going to go with Samir with the side tricep. Yeah.
Okay. How about you, Tom?
I think I'm going to have to agree. Francis Benfato, I love his side tricep. I would even, and if you get a chance to talk to Rick, Phil, let him know that I had him right up in there in the top three.
I agree with that.
Yep. Yeah, and so I would go with Samir as an overall polished side tricep Samir.
Yeah,
for sure.
Okay. I'm going to go with, I'm either thinking Zane, McAway, or Rory, now that we brought up Rory.
Ooh, Rory. so good, man.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Rory Liedemeyer. I think just the overall look, he had that small waist, the way he did the pose, you know, the whole picture. I'm going to go with him. But Samir,
love to see those two side by side to make a decision. But yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's a tough one to call. It really is, you know?
Yeah.
Listen, Boyer Coe, I was thinking, to me, it'd be a close runner-up to Samir for the side tricep. Boy had a tremendous – and even Chris Dickerson.
Chris had a great one, yeah.
Standing side tricep. So it's a real tough one to call. Yeah. I go with Samir because, to me, like Phil mentioned, he had this, like, freaky tricep that nobody else had, you know? So that's why I went with Samir.
Yeah.
They had this appearance, and I never saw in anyone. Yeah.
All right, let's go.
Wait. I got to throw somebody else in there real quick before we finalize it. How many of you remember seeing Andreas Munzer's side tricep?
Oh, wow.
I mean, you talk about shredded cross striations.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything, not just his side tricep. As far as striations are concerned, freaky.
Yeah,
he was in the 90s, though, I think.
I'm still going with Samir.
Okay.
God rest his soul, Andre.
If it was the 90s, John, I would actually put – I would agree with – I would put Munzer first in the side tricep from the 90s.
Yeah.
I knew Munzer, and I interviewed him. I saw him up close. Again, just – even if you talk about defined, he actually beat Samir with that. I mean, he had – it looked like he had no skin. He had his –
was
no,
unbelievable.
No photo does this guy justice. You had to see him standing.
I
wrote this recently because, you know, you have a lot of guys today going around like, what's his name? Ronnie Coleman. He said in an interview that he was 0.03%.
Right.
I'm thinking, first of all, that's incompatible with life, right? Second of all, him being that level of body fat, weighing 290 pounds, is about as possible as winning the Powerball lottery 15 times in a row. But the thing that got the thing that I pointed out to show how ludicrous that was, and I'm not trying to put down Ronnie. I'm sure somebody told him this, and you know, whatever. But when I interviewed Andreas Munzer, I asked him, "Did you ever have your body fat measured?" He says, yeah. He says, and I said, what was he? He says, 5%. And I'm thinking, if this guy's 5%, what are the other guys who are claiming 3% or less? He's 10 times more cut than them.
Right.
They're liars.
I had never seen anyone. When I saw him backstage at the Olympia, I was dumbfounded. I was like, holy crap, his leg. He was doing a leg shot in the mirror, and I was like, good God. I'm telling you, it was like cellophane. And if he was 5%, but again, he knew how to dry. That was one of the things that cost his life. He knew how to dry out so tight. He became so tight. It was incredible. No water under the skin at all.
No water at all. That's right. None. Exactly.
Yeah, none.
Right.
Yeah. I do want to point out one last thing before we, and then we're moving on, but but I find it hard to believe that we haven't talked about Ronnie Coleman until this moment.
He's a 90s too.
Well, he's a 90s. There you go. Yeah,
I guess he was. Well, he was competing in the 80s, but he wasn't that good in the 80s.
No.
Right? No.
When did he win his first Olympia?
98.
Yeah. It was 98. So was that? Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, in his, I think one of his first Olympia appearances, he placed 16th.
Right.
Yes.
He was last.
Yeah. Like 3 years later, he won.
I beat him at Night of the Champions. No one knew who he was. No. He was just in the background. You know what I mean? He didn't even look like the same guy, quite honestly. And you guys remember there were two Ronnie Colemans going on at the same time.
That's right. That's,
yeah.
Yeah. I was very confused about which Ronnie Coleman it was.
Yeah. Yeah. One was Ronald Coleman and one was Ronnie Coleman.
Right, yeah. Right.
Now, Ronnie won the world championships in what? What year was that?
91.
92?
91.
91.
91.
And supposedly, and I believe it, when you look at him before and after, he was clean when he actually won that show because that was a drug tested show.
I think he only weighed like 212 pounds.
Oh, sure. So that's
incredible. So
I met him at that. That's when I met Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah, we talked about that, Jerry. Yeah.
Yeah, right after he won the world. And I asked him, I said, what do you think about drugs? He says, I don't use any. He said, I don't use any drugs at all. And I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, is this guy a liar? What's going on? How do you look that good without drugs? He wasn't that big, but he still looked pretty good, you know? Yeah,
incredible.
And he tells me that famous story he always tells, how he walked into this gym in Texas. I think he was a football player, and then they never didn't lift weights at all. And the guy took one look at him and said, I'll give you a free membership if you start training for bodybuilding. Because he already had a bodybuilder's physique when he joined the gym.
Yeah,
that's
right.
People don't realize that about Ronnie Coleman. Sure, he used drugs later on, but this guy had just tremendous genetics. He says himself for bodybuilding. I mean, he was just super responsive.
I think he was lifting weights, though, Jay. I think he was doing powerlifting in high school.
Powerlifting, yes.
Powerlifting. But he never really did.
Like, he wasn't a bodybuilder, though, no.
Not a bodybuilder, right. Yeah. You're right, John. That's true. Yeah. Mm. Right.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Tom Terwilliger, Jerry Branham, and Phil Williams for joining me today for the show. And we will have part two of their interview next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring another episode of the podcast. I want to thank all you generous Patreon donors for donating to the show every month. I really appreciate you guys. And be sure to send out your emails to naturalolympia@gmail.com about this show. Let me get your opinion on who you thought looked the best in the mandatory poses. And if you're interested in training or nutrition advice, please visit my website, johnhansonfitness.com. All right, guys, hope you had a wonderful Mother's Day. Stay healthy, enjoy your workouts, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.